الحمد لله الحمد لله وكفى وسلم على عباده الذين اصطفى ما بعد اللهم صل على سيدنا محمد وعلى ال سيدنا محمد وبارك وسلم. So a couple of points that I didn't mention this morning about bukhl. Remember one of the things I remember a very nice story about surrounding the idea that bukhl can be about things other than just money. And one of those was one of my teachers, Sheikh Hussein. He mentioned to me one time, he said, I don't know, I think I was doing an itikaf program or something like that. He said, you know, if you have any points, just use them, right? Just use them for the crowd. And what he meant by this, and sometimes people don't might not really relate with that, but if you're, you know, giving a lot of talks, when you're actually on the speaker circuit, there's a lot of spiritual diseases that actually come when you're in the public eye and you're going out. And this is a well-known pitfall, so much so that, you know, you look at Mufti Taqi Usmani, rahimullah, namaz barakatuhu, that he wasn't allowed to actually give public talks for a long time as a part of his tarbiyah. Right, he's one of the greatest scholars in the world. But his sheikh would tell him, like, no, you're not giving any talks. And so he would sit quiet and until, like, he wanted to make sure that this person was, you know, purified before you get out there. Because when you get out there in the spotlight, there's a lot of different things that come up. And so one of those things is that what happens is that, you know, when you're in the thing, you're trying to making, if you have, like, a very, one of the diseases that comes up is you want to make a point that no one else has made before. Right? If you're going to say something that everyone else has already said, that doesn't seem new, it doesn't get the same, you know, glaze of wonder in everyone's eyes. And that's a problem, because one of the things our teacher said is that your job is not to make up anything new. Your job is just to take what you heard from your teachers and just give it, you're just giving the message to the next generation. You're just a messenger. So in some ways that doesn't let you get to your head too, because then you're just like, you just tell yourself, I'm just a parrot. I heard it from there, I'm just telling anything, there's no khubi in me. And that's really just the chain that's been coming down all the way from the Prophet ﷺ, the whole idea of a sanad, right? لَوْلَا سَنَدْ لَقَالَ مَنْ شَاءَ مَا شَاءَ. If there wasn't a sanad, then anyone would say whatever they want. But we don't have, as scholars of the deen, as servants of the deen, the allowance or the latitude to say whatever you want. You only are able to speak within circumscribed terms, and those circumscribed terms are based on inheritance, what we got from our elders, who got from their elders, who got from their elders, going back to the Sahaba, going back to the Prophet ﷺ. So that's one of the things that really keeps the deen so preserved in Islam, as opposed to many of these other religions. They don't have the same fail-safes, so to speak. And so one of the other things is to, when you get a certain point, you know, and especially if it's a very, like, strong point, then you say, oh, you know, I'll save this, right? I'll save this for a big bayan. I'll save this for, you know, when maybe my Eid khutbah and this and that. But he said, no, if Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala put, first of all, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala put that thought in your heart. He put that in your mind. He said, if it's there, he said, just spend it. Spend it. He said, Allah will replenish it. And so even with your thoughts and your ideas, the idea to be able to give to others generously and not to covet it, that's a type of spending. One of the other things I wanted to mention is about, so that was one anecdote. The other anecdote was, or the other point was about one of the treatments. One of the treatments for being tight-handed is doing the opposite. So, and this is something to understand when it comes to spiritual diseases. Sometimes when the paper is bent too much this way, you know that it's not enough just to make it straight, because then the bent is still remains in the paper. You got to go the other way, right? And this is something sometimes the mashayikh use, which is another sort of side point, but important point to know is that it's good that we're going through these, you know, like this manual. But you know, even if you're in psychiatry, you know that when you go through the DSM manual, you go through the psychiatric, you know, rotation, you look at every disease and you think that you have it, right? Or, you know, you're like, oh yeah, I have that, I have borderline, I have this, and then you think, and then you're seeing everyone else and he's like, yeah, he has that disease and he has that disease, and that's not really the point. There's a problem with self-diagnosis, number one, and number two, with self-medication too. So these are, you know, these are things to create awareness, right? And some general guidelines. But we should always, you know, keep the sohbah of people who have wisdom to help in our own rectification, because it also requires a tabib. You just don't have the medication, you also want a doctor who can tell you what the right medication for the right person is, because not the two different people will respond two very different ways to the same type of medication. So something would be good for another person, one person, but it won't be good for another person. So, for example, like I'm telling you right now, it might be, you know, sometimes you have to bend it the other way. So that doesn't mean you just go home and say, okay, I'm giving everything away, right? Because for some people, that will get them in more trouble. It'll get them more trouble in their deen. But just understanding that that idea is sometimes you will see the mashayikh and the teachers telling people to give up things which are sometimes normally permissible. So they're saying, are you making, ya ayyuhan nabiyyu lima tuharrimu ma halallahu lak? This is permissible. Look at these people, they're bidatis, they're making something halal, haram, and so on and so forth. No, it's just trying to return balance to something that was off kilter. So someone, for example, the nafs is not in control, they might tell the student, don't eat sweets. Are sweets halal? Yes. But for a short period of time, to tell them to avoid sweets so that they become more in control of their nafs, so they don't start eating things that they shouldn't be eating and become indiscriminate about their diet, is completely okay, because it's for a higher purpose. But one of the cures for bukhul is just to spend. Right? And there comes in one narration from Abu Hurairah radiallahu anhu that قال الله أنفق يا ابن آدم, O son of Adam, spend. Right? أنفقوا عليك, I'll spend on you. And this won't happen, right? The beginning of this equation starts with the individual. You have to take the first step, and then Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will show his colors. And what happens is people are sometimes too, that's the problem with miserliness, you're too scared to take that first step, you're too cowardly to take the first step, so you never get to see the beauty of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala responding and fulfilling your needs and your hawaij and stuff, and then a person becomes weaker and weaker and weaker, and becomes this vicious negative cycle. On the other side, if you take that leap of faith and spend in the path of Allah, spend on your family and are generous, and then Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala replenishes you, it becomes a positive cycle. Right? Then you said, you know, it will be okay. Allah will take care of it. And then it increases a person in tawakkul. That's also should sort of temper this idea with, it's good to spend, but it's actually blameworthy to spend too much. And that's something also to mention on the side of how the nafs works and the disease of the heart. The nafs is always going to extremes. It's very hard to stay right in the middle. Right? And right in the middle, I was just joking with the kids, you know, the other day on the our group chat, you know, how like parents talk to their kids like, bete, you know, you go to itikaf, like, no, don't become too extreme, you know, you don't want to become too dindar, you should, and so people are just, you know, want a little bit of dunya, you want to have your cake and eat it too, that's not what I'm talking about, but there is something about talking about being on the middle path, the sirat al-mustaqim. So what I mean is that when people go to extremes outside the bounds of the sharia, some people who will fast so much that it will hurt their body, right? That's not what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala requires from us. Some people who will stand so much in prayer that they don't fulfill their responsibilities towards their family. Right? You're neglecting other things in the deen, and that's a type of extremism. And there's fewer people who go that way, but that's also a problem as well. You look at the Khawarij, which is sort of the quintessential example of people who were extremists in the deen. And you know, even some of these ISIS people, you know, they're ostensibly, you might look at them, and that's where a lot of people got confused. They looked at these people and they're like, they look really religious, right? They have long beards and they're wearing amama, and it's all about la ilaha illallah, and we want to establish, you know, Islam, and so that we want to stop oppression. And that's how they get these young kids, because they show them these videos of these, you know, people being oppressed, and they're like, you don't care about your Muslim brothers and you don't care about your Muslim sisters, and they touch at the heartstrings. And young people who want to establish equity in the world and want to establish balance in the world, and they want to be socially active and agents of positive change in the world, they get sucked in, right? Because they sort of trust them and take them on surface. But the Khawarij were also like that, right? And the Khawarij were, you know, there was a deviant sect in Islamic history. And just to give you an idea, if you were to see them, their eyes would be sunken, because they used to fast so much and they used to stand so much in prayer. And one of them, they were going to cut their tongues, and he started screaming. They were torturing him. He didn't do anything. And they were about to cut his tongue, and then he started screaming. They said, "Why are you screaming?" He said, "I don't want to die except with the dhikr of Allah on my tongue." So when you meet people like that, you know, people get confused. It's like they're deen, there's not deen. And let's just be very clear. You know, I asked one of my teachers about ISIS, and he said it beautifully in one sentence. He says, "There is no deen in them. There is no deen in them. That's not Islam. That's not what the Prophet ﷺ brought," right? In any case, you want to be moderate. And the Quran also talks about this. It says, don't be so stingy that, you know, your hands are stuck to your neck. And don't just spread it. No, spread your hands openly. Then you sit tomorrow and then you're blameworthy. Now you have to go ask someone else for money because you did it so much at the fundraiser yesterday. And now you have to, your family is in a difficult situation because, you know, you gave too much to help your brother out, you know, so on and so forth. It was a good thing and your intention was good, but you should also have some type of thing. And this is an advice that the Prophet ﷺ gave to the Sahaba themselves. One of the Sahaba, they had this impetus, and you saw this in the Sahaba. Some of them would say that, "Well, that's the Prophet, but I'm going to stand all night and pray. I'm going to fast all the time." And the Prophet ﷺ got extremely angry, right? He got extremely angry, and he came to correct him. And he said that, you know, this is... he established what is his sunnah. فَمَنْ رَغِبَ عَنْ سُنَّةِ فَلَيْسَ مِنِّي. Whoever turns away from my sunnah is not from amongst me. You have to stay in this middle way. And one of the Sahaba, for example, he wanted to give everything away when he was passing away. And the Prophet, and he was conversation going back and forth. And then in the end, the Prophet said, "الثلث والثلث كثير." He said, "A third, you can bequest up to a third. And that's a lot. Because it's better that you leave something behind for your family so that they don't have to spread their hands in front of someone else than you're just going and giving in sadaqah, right? And then you left your family in a tough spot. That's not deen. You know, and one of my sheikhs, he used to say a very strong statement. He said that, you know, something like, that person who doesn't have a house, like a paid off house, he's like, that person doesn't have any iman or something. Like some very strong statement. And you have to understand how, 100 years ago, what the context was. That in the Indian subcontinent, women were generally completely dependent on... They weren't working. They weren't necessarily educated. They spent their entire life dependent on their husbands. And if their husbands were to pass away and didn't have other kin to rely on, now they were left on the streets. And they would have to maybe be pushed into, you know, other lines of work which are not appropriate. They were put in a difficult spot. So he said the least that you should do is have enough foresight to have a shelter over your wife's head if something were to happen to you tomorrow. That is a moral responsibility. So, I mean, yes, it's good to spend, but you have to be careful.